Okay, we're doing our class on Halacha, our new series called Judaism from Head to Toe. So we've covered so far the laws of a yarmulke, the laws of a wig, some of the laws of wearing tefillin on the head. We discussed the front limit, the back limit. We need to discuss a few more things. Let's begin with the laws of tefillin. When you buy tefillin, you should buy tefillin from a reputable source. Inside our tefillin, we have four scrolls in the head tefillin and one scroll in the arm tefillin. The head tefillin, the four scrolls have Shema Yisrael Shem Kino Shem Echad, that parsha, Vayayim Shamoa, that parsha, and then Kadesh Li Kol Bechor, and Vayaki Yaviyacha Hashem Elokecha. The order of the parshiyot, there were two opinions dating back long before Tosus, as we discussed in a class last semester. Tosus quotes from the Gaonic period that there were two opinions as to what the order of those parshiyot should be, and that's what we today call the tefillin of Rashi or the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. The difference between them being the order of the parshiyot in the Shel Rosh. But everyone agrees that the parshiyot, the scrolls of tefillin, have to be written in order. So if you wrote Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and after you finished writing the word Echad, you notice that in your Shema, you forgot to write one of the legs of the shin. So you made an ayin, yeah? You made one leg, the bottom, and a middle stroke, and then the last stroke that makes the shin, you forgot to write. So now you don't have the shape of a shin over there. You have an ayin. You have to go back and fix it. So the halacha says you're not allowed to. It has to be kisidran. The tefillin have to be written in order. So you'll erase, going back till your first chin. You can't do that because you have Hashem's name there. You're not allowed to erase Hashem's name. So you have to take that parchment and put it in Geniza. You put it in a place where it will be buried. You have to take a new parchment and start writing all over again. You're at the end of Shema, and you suddenly realize you made a mistake in the middle. Now all your work goes for naught. You made that same mistake I just described, but you already finished writing the Parsha of Shema. And you look back and you say, oh my gosh, I forgot my first shin was off. What do I do now? So you have to be a God-fearing person, put it in the Geniza and start again. So that's why when we buy tefillin, we have to make sure we buy tefillin from a reputable source, because no one will know if you add that leg in the end. You can't look at the tefillin and tell if the person wrote them in order or not in order. There are many things a person can do in writing tefillin that disqualify the tefillin. I gave one example. But there are many things a person can do that would disqualify the tefillin. When we buy tefillin, we're assuming the person is a God-fearing person. The scrolls in the tefillin have to be written by someone who's God-fearing, who knows the halachot, and is careful to adhere to them. So that's why you shouldn't just go down the block and pick up a pair of tefillin. You buy your tefillin from someone you can trust, from a God-fearing scribe. Now, when it comes to the tefillin, we have two major costs. There's the cost of the parchments, the scrolls that are written inside, what's called the klaf, and then there's the cost of the batim, the actual houses which you see that you put on your head and your arm. Batim today we generally make from thicker hides, what's called gasos, because we have the machinery to make thicker hides. They never did that before, meaning until 200 years ago, all the tefillin were made of thinner hides, like sheep, what's called dakos, thin hides. And those didn't last so long, meaning the thin hides, if they'd get banged, you didn't necessarily have the same pair of tefillin your whole life. Our tefillin, you could give to your children and grandchildren. They could last a long time. But tefillin also have to be made for the sake of the mitzvah and done correctly. Sometimes a tefillin looks beautiful, but really what they've done is they've added layers of glue so that you can't tell, and that's how they make the tefillin nice. By the way, it's the same thing with a shofar. When you buy a shofar, so there are shofarot that have holes that disqualify them, and they take the cement that you make countertops with, that you fill the cracks of countertops, and they stick that into the shofar, and then you'll never know it, because they can make it blend with the shofar, and here you have a disqualified shofar that looks perfect, and you don't know it. So that's a disqualified shofar, and tefillin can also be disqualified, but you won't know it. There can be holes in the parchment of the, when we make the bite, on the inside there can be holes you don't know about. It can be covered up. So you have to buy your tefillin and the batim from a reputable source. Next we come to the straps. So the straps is hard work. You have to make the straps for the sake of the mitzvah. You have to dye them. So someone came out and said, I have the cheapest straps. I found ways of mass producing it. And he sold straps all over the country. And after about, two or three years that he was selling straps, they caught on that he would bring the rabbis and show them his factory in Israel. And for every 1,000 yards of straps that they gave him a heksher, he would bring in from Korea another 20, 30,000 yards, which he sold. Now, those straps that he brought in from Korea had a plastic coating, and after a few years, it started separating, and you could see it wasn't real straps. It wasn't kosher straps. So we have to buy our straps also. Ideally, you go to a sofer, you go to a scribe who you can trust, and he will take care of these three components. So when we talk about tefillin, so we have to be careful our tefillin don't get wet. I once had mezuzahs at home, and one of my children was then a baby. They took the mezuzahs, put it in their mouth, and decided to bite it. And there went the mezuzahs, because with his saliva, it erased whole letters from the mezuzah, and there went those mezuzahs. So water can cause the dye of the writing inside the tefillin to be erased. So we have to make sure our tefillin don't come in contact with water. So obviously, when we go hiking, if we're going to go into the river, our tefillin shouldn't be in the bag that goes in the river. If we're going to be in the rain, so we have to make sure our tefillin are in a thing that's waterproof. But what people don't realize is if they take a shower or go to the mikveh in the morning and then they put on their tefillin, so very often the sweat or the water from the mikveh on their hair goes into the tefillin. Over time, that can cause the inside of the tefillin to be moist and ultimately to become pasul. Another thing that people do that disqualifies their tefillin is they leave it in the sun. If you leave it in your car, so then the doors are closed, the heat of the car goes to a very high heat, so it's not only dangerous to children, it's also dangerous to tefillin, destroys the tefillin. Ordinarily, if your tefillin were checked once, so then you don't have to check them if they didn't undergo any trauma. Some people check them
for
pretty long. Assuming they don't undergo trauma, you don't have to check them often. You can go years without checking them. You know, I checked my tefillin after maybe 15, 20 years. I checked my tefillin. I'm saying if you had them checked once, because you don't want to check them and suddenly discover, hey, I've been wearing the same tefillin for years and there was something wrong with them. Someone brought me a tefillin. They were disqualified. This happened. So you should check your tefillin every so often. When you go to check, we can't do questions right now. Save it for next class. When you go to check your tefillin, you have to make sure you go to a very, very good, reliable sofer. There are a lot of charlatans out there. And people can be a charlatan and have a long beard and tayus and pictures of all kinds of rabbis in their store, and that doesn't mean they're honest. There have been people who have taken people's parchments and disqualified them and then said, look, here your parchment has this problem or that problem. There's a lot of hanky-panky out there. You have to make sure you're going to a good person who can really check it. If you've gone to a good person, and again, get recommendations. Get recommendations from one of the rabbis. You've gone to a good person, so then if they tell you it's not good, take it and bring it to one of your rabbis and ask them, here's what I showed the scribe, is it good or not? I had a student who the sofer told him, your tefillin are disqualified. The guy was devastated. For years he was wearing his tefillin. And when he brought it to me, I said, you know, your scribe answered you based on Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu held that this letter written this way is disqualified. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a response where he says it's kosher. I'd have no problem wearing those tefillin and making a blessing on them. There's no problem. If you were a Sephardi, if you went with Chacham Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, then okay, you could say, I don't want to wear those tefillin. But Rav Feinstein has a response where he says that exact yud written that way is kosher. It's not a problem. So your tefillin are kosher, for sure, according to Rabbi Feinstein. And even according to Rav Eliyahu, he held it's better not to do it this way. He didn't really hold it was disqualified. So, okay. The scribe he went to was very machmir. Okay, I didn't think there was any reason to be so machmir. At least the guy didn't have to walk around feeling like he hadn't worn tefillin his whole life. You know, so that's I recommend whatever the scribe tells you, take it back and show it to your rabbi. So that's with regards to tefillin on the head. We said the tefillin have to be above the hairline and they shouldn't cross the fontanelle. And in the back, they also have to be where hair grows. Now we go on to Our next mitzvah we discussed last week, women wearing wigs in the last class, and head coverings, and how much a woman has to cover. In this class, we're going to discuss a little bit of Pe'at HaRosh. So the Torah says we have a hairline. Okay, our hair goes this way. Our hairline goes across our forehead. And then we have a hairline that goes over our ears, right? You're not supposed to connect the two hairlines. So you have the hairline that goes around your head, and then you have the hairline behind your ears. So the Torah says don't connect the two. In other words, lo takifu pe'at roshchem. Lo takifu. Don't make a full circle around the hairline of your head. Don't connect the hairlines. And that's what we call pe'ah, the corner of our head. Here you have a corner that juts down of hair that goes down along the ear. Well, that corner of hair, you're not supposed to cut down. If you were to shave the corners of your hair just behind the temple, then you would be connecting the hairline on the top of your forehead with the hairline behind your ear. Torah says, don't connect the hairline. Don't make it one straight line. If you shave off this hair, the hair that's over here next between the temple and the ear, what you've really done is you've created a straight line, a line that connects the hairline of the forehead with the hairline behind the ear.
Messed up hairline.
Okay, but you could. So the Torah says don't do that. So we say you draw a line from your hairline of your head down to the hairline behind the ear, and from that point downward, you're not allowed to shave off. Doesn't matter if you're using a razor or a shaving machine. You have to leave the hair long enough that you could fold the hair onto itself. That's not so long. That's I don't want to say numbers because in some countries it's centimeters and inches. So without discussing numbers, it has to be a hair that's long enough that it could fold onto itself, which isn't that long. So that's how long you have to leave these hairs. Our custom is that when children are young, before they grow a beard, we let them grow their payas a little bit longer so that they cover the area where they theoretically would be growing a beard, the corner of their beard up here. How long should the payas be? So the Yemenites and some Jews have a custom to grow their payas really long. Technically, we let our payas grow the corner of the head. We said how long the hair has to be. And the custom is very often to go down to the bone. Some say just after the bone. Some say the top of the bone. But that's for children. For adults, the halacha is really that you don't cut the hair shorter than a hair that could fold onto itself. Now, the corner of the beard, we'll still discuss the prohibition of shaving with a razor. We're not up to that just yet.
Quick.
Yes.
When they say, look to keep it, your
Pat
head.
Roshchem, yeah.
So, what happens if you shave your whole head?
So, it doesn't matter. You got to leave that growing.
There's no hairline.
It doesn't matter. The Torah defined that from this line downward, you have to leave the hair long enough that you could fold the hair onto itself.
Bald is not allowed.
Correct. Yeah. You cannot shave your head bald. You would have to leave this area with hair that's at least that long.
Is there like a line?
The line.
Oh, this up here.
This line, the hairline, going down to here and downward. Some say it's a straight line to go like this and down. So that's... So that's Pe'at Roshchem, the Pe'as HaRosh that a man has to leave on. When we speak about the beard, we'll speak about the prohibition of cutting with a razor. On the head, it doesn't matter with what you cut it, you're supposed to leave that hair grown. We'll pick up here, Be'ezat Shem, next time.